The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Hello, and welcome to another reading of the November 2023 edition of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is Giving Thanks, and this is the month that we celebrate Veterans Day, formerly called Armistice Day, I believe. And so, although the day has passed, I'm going to read an article entitled Honor Bound, 99 North Carolina Military Veterans, whose service spans from World War II to more recent conflicts, spent a day of reflection in Washington, D.C., and returned home to joyous celebration, written by Jerry Rao. There's a picture of the Washington Monument here, and another picture whose caption I will used to explain what it is. Veterans from Central North Carolina gathered in the nation's capital at hallowed sites like the World War II Memorial, which was shown on the first of two pages here. That's where we see the Washington Monument. Later, when the former soldiers, including Robert Paget, accompanied by son Jeff, returned home, they were greeted by Oak Ridge Military Academy cadets holding an American flag aloft. So we see three of the cadets here, all dressed in their sharp military uniforms, which consist of white pants and medium to dark blue jackets and their white caps. And they are holding above their heads a huge American flag. And Robert and his son are walking underneath that flag. Robert is using a walker, and both of the boys, both his son and the man, are holding their hands aloft, partially in appreciation and sort of a salute, if you will, but also to keep the flag from flapping down on their heads, because it's a huge flag and it sags a little in the middle. And now the article. Inside Piedmont Triad International Airport in Greensboro, Wonder Woman stands near a few Uncle Sams as the Statue of Liberty weaves through the huddled masses, plastic torch in hand. Surrounding them, in an airline terminal awash in red, white, and blue, a crowd gathers. They bring star-shaped balloons, American flags of all sizes, and homemade signs proclaiming, "Welcome home, thank you for your service, and we love you, Daddy Wallace." Then here he comes, Daddy Wallace. He appears from around a corner, one of 99 military veterans who flew to Washington, D.C. earlier on this Wednesday as part of the Triad Honor Flight. Now they're returning home to great fanfare. When Daddy Wallace comes into view, the onlookers roar. Garland Wallace, a U.S. Navy veteran from Winston-Salem, affectionately known by his kinfolk as Daddy or Granddaddy Wallace, looks puzzled by the attention. He makes his way into the terminal, walking on a makeshift runway, nearly 50 yards long, and bordered by stanchions and a crowd six people deep. Under the bright lights, his face glows. All these people coming together, he keeps telling himself, showing love, nothing but love. Near the security checkpoint, away from the jubilance, stands Allison Huber, a married mother of two and the only daughter of a Green Beret. She's the brains behind Triad Honor Flight, a reboot of an earlier program called Triad Flight of Honor. For 2 years, beginning in 2009, the Piedmont Rotary District 7690 flew World War I veterans to Washington, D.C. to see the memorial honoring their service. But after 13 flights, that project ended in November 2011. 7 years later, inspired by an emotional trip to D.C. with her father to see the monuments, Huber reconfigured the volunteer effort as Triad Honor Flight, offering the experience not just to World War II vets, but to all veterans age 65 and older who lived in central North Carolina. Standing before a row of American flags as the veterans exit the plane, Huber is star-spangled from her socks to her top hat. The vets have just landed safely back home after a long and exhausting day of visiting military monuments and connecting with each other. The trip began around daybreak, and it's now just before sunset. Huber has been with the group all day as the flight director, and she's here now to prepare them for their post-trip parade, their welcome home. She greets them, hugs them, and tells each one the same thing about the big crowd that they're about to meet around the corner. Take it in, she says. This is all for you. Edna Livingood emerges in a wheelchair pushed by her daughter, Elizabeth Livingood Ayers. A nurse during World War II, Livingood raises her chin high and smiles big as she rolls toward the crowd. She holds a cane in one hand and waves with the other. Her daughter laughs. You're just like Queen Elizabeth, waving back and forth, Ayers says. Livingood can't resist. The last time she was recognized for her military service was in the spring of 1945. She was getting ready to fly to Hawaii to care for injured soldiers at a U.S. Army hospital. Livingood and two of her nurse friends were staying in New York City, and they wanted to celebrate one more time before their life got hectic. So they went to Billy Rose's Diamond Horseshoe, the famously opulent Times Square nightclub. When the club manager heard about their service, he seated them up front under a spotlight. The club's crowd gave them a standing ovation. Back then, Livingood was 23. On this day, she's 100. And her post-trip parade in Greensboro is the first time in 77 years that anyone has recognized her military career. Livingood waves and smiles and waves some more. I was feeling my oats, she says later, laughing. Her husband, Dick, died in 2009. He was a World War II Marine veteran. Since then, Livingood has rarely ventured beyond her home in Davidson County, a sylvan spot of 35 acres where she and Dick reared four children. At her 100th birthday party in October 2022, three generations of Livingood celebrated at her home. At the party, her great-nephew suggested that she go on the Triad Honor Flight. She didn't respond. Then, at another family gathering in March, he mentioned it again. This time, she perked up. I think I'd like to do that, she said. Everyone in the room fell out of their chairs. Why the change of heart, they asked. I'm 100, she replied. If it kills me, I don't care. Earlier today, when she boarded the airplane bound for D.C., Livingood became the oldest female veteran from World War II to participate in Triad Honor Flight. In Washington, she was asked to lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. It was quite the honor, she says. He sacrificed for us. Living Good's daughter watched the whole scene play out, and what she saw caught her off guard. Ayers, a 70-year-old retired pharmacist, felt tears inch down her cheeks. They were playing taps, and Mom had her little hand pressed against her forehead in a salute, she says. It about made me cry. I had never seen her do that, and to see her frail hand up against her forehead, it touched my heart. When Porter Haley Burton follows Livin' Good out of the plane, Hubert dutifully stops him before he heads down to the big crowd in the terminal. "Welcome home," she says. Haberton turned 82 in January. In October 1965, when he was a 24-year-old Navy radar intercept officer, his fighter jet was shot down near Hanoi. His pilot, Stanley Edward Olmsted, died. Haley Burton ejected and was later captured by villagers armed with knives, spears, and old rifles. He spent 2,675 days as a prisoner of war, 7 years and 3 months cooped up in cells at 8 different prisons. On a Monday in February 1973, he walked out of his last one, Hoa Lo Prison, nickname for Hanoi Hilton. Haliburton turned back and said, "I forgive you." Earlier today, up in D.C., Haliburton stood before the Vietnam Veterans Memorial and stared at the long list of names. "I was looking at Stan Olmsted's name and seeing it in stone," he says. "I always think about how, if we were going slightly faster than we were, the shell would have gone off in my cockpit rather than Stan's." He pauses. "My name could have easily been on that wall." Last year, the Naval Institute Press published Haliburton's memories, poems, and drawings in Reflections on Captivity, a tapestry of stories by a Vietnam War POW, and named him its author of the year. In the memoir, Haliburton writes of how he persevered by staying active mentally, spiritually, and physically. A 1963 graduate of Davidson College with a degree in English literature, Haliburton had written down some of the poems in his cells on whatever he could find, but mostly he committed them to memory until he returned home. They reveal a resilient young man who used words to cope and survive. He wrote about more than just war and captivity. He also wrote about the girl from Queens College whom he'd met at a party. They got married 2 days before Christmas, 1963. He was 21, she was 20. As a POW 7 years later, he expressed his love for her in a poem called Marty. "Oh, how can I describe you, or what you mean to me? I cannot paint the picture with the words for you to see. But I can say I love you in 1,000 different ways, love you and adore you to the end of my days." Inside the terminal in Greensboro, Haliburton meets with what he describes as a wave of humanity. Every few feet, people are holding banners and flags. He waves to them. What he sees feels genuine and also feels somehow familiar. Then he remembers. After his release in 1973, he'd walked into a similarly jubilant celebration looking for his wife, Marty, and the 7-year-old daughter he hadn't seen since she was 5 days old. Her name was Dabney. On this night in Greensboro, Haliburton finds himself looking for them again. He spots them near the back of the makeshift runway. Dabney, now 58, stands with her husband, Walker. Beside her is Marty, Haliburton's wife, of nearly 60 years. He is home again. When the Welcome Home celebration ends, U.S. Air Force veteran Laura Ballinger catches up with her longtime companion, Garland Wallace. Since the death of Wallace's wife, Diane, just over a decade ago, he and Ballinger have spent much of their time doing things together. That includes the Triad Honor Flight. Ballinger, 76, spent 22 years in the Air Force. She enlisted because she wanted to earn a living like her military husband did. After their divorce, she stuck with it. Ballinger worked in pediatric units and became a nursing supervisor. She was stationed all over the world. Wallace, 88, spent 4 years in the Navy. As a young man who'd never ventured farther north than Danville, Virginia, his military stint set him as far north as Iceland and as far south as Cuba. He saw the North Atlantic from the deck of the destroyer USS Forest Royal. Wallace keeps a framed black-and-white photo of the ship in his den as a reminder of his service. Ballinger doesn't have that luxury. In January of 2015, an electrical short in her basement caused a fire that destroyed her home in Stanleyville. She lost everything from her military career. The only thing that the firefighters could save was the 6-foot metal American flag holding or hanging on her garage door. That was rectified during the Triad Honor Flight earlier in the day at the Military Women's Memorial in Arlington, Virginia. Ballinger was presented with a certificate in a handsome folder, along with 2 commemorative coins, each as big as a half dollar, to honor her service. She didn't know about the presentation. When she received the folder, she cried. "That was special for me," she says later. "I never felt worthless. I had a good career. I got to hobnob with generals and airmen, but I lost everything in the fire. Now I have something to hold on to." The crowd in the terminal begins to thin as Wallace gathers with 4 generations of family for a photo beneath the huge American flag. He's surrounded by at least 2 dozen people. At his left, sitting in a wheelchair, is Ballinger. While the group poses, Huber stands nearby with some volunteers, still in her top hat and all-American outfit. She's tying up the final details of a very long day. Huber has organized 5 Triad Honor Flights so far, and with each trip comes a special happy moment, and some sad ones. The day after the welcome home celebration in Greensboro, Huber gets some tough news. She finds out that a World War II veteran from Burlington, a man she'd befriended from a previous Triad Honor Flight, had died on the very day of the Wednesday flight. His name, Vincent Corsini. During World War II, Corsini served in the Army as an ammunition carrier. He landed on Omaha Beach on June 6, 1944, D-Day, the largest seaborne invasion in history. He saved a man's life that day. The man had broken his foot, and Corsini dragged him 300 yards to safety through sand and pebbles. Corsini was just 19. He earned a Purple Heart and a Bronze Star for his service. A year ago in October, Corsini led the Honor Flight's post-parade trip through the airport, and now he's dead at 98. After a funeral mass at Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church, Corsini's graveside memorial service takes place at Alamance Memorial Park in Burlington. Before his death, he asked to be laid to rest with something very special to him, something that made him very happy. His wish is fulfilled. Corsini is buried wearing his blue Triad Honor Flight jacket. Jeffrey Rowe, the youngest son of a World War II Army veteran, is the senior writer in High Point University's Communication Office. To find out more, visit triadhonorflight.org. And now, giving thanks. Whether folk dancing in Black Mountain or playing touch football at Hickory Nut Gap Farm in Fairview, Thanksgiving is a time of coming together with friends and family. We give thanks this season for the little things that bring us joy. Folk family. Each year, families forego a traditional Thanksgiving weekend to gather in Black Mountain for intergenerational fun through folk dancing, crafts, music, and games. Written by Katie King. Shuffle up, step, turn, cross, heel, step. Or wait, is it step, heel, cross? Out on the dance floor, everyone seems to know what they're doing. If you don't know this dance, says a voice to my right, as Wren Bannerman comes to sit in the chair next to me, get behind everyone. That's kind of the golden rule at dance camps. You might like what you see or hear, but they're not teaching it necessarily, so you can learn it from behind. This is my first time at Bannerman Folk Camp, but most of these people have been coming for years. Some of them were at the first camp in 1970. Each year over Thanksgiving weekend, up to 100 people join the extended Bannerman family at the YMCA Blue Ridge Assembly, a secluded mountaintop retreat in Black Mountain for American and international folk dancing, camp songs and field games, old-time music, outdoor cooking, workshops, puppetry, and storytelling. Despite reading all of this on the website, I'm still not quite sure what to expect from this weekend. It sounds so different from any Thanksgiving I've ever had. Emboldened by Wren's words, I jump up to join the other dancers. I stumble through the steps at first, but in time my muscle memory kicks in. Shuffle up, step, turn, step, heel, cross. Got it. Every member of the Bannerman family, about 25 of them, come to camp each year. And they have a way of making campers feel welcome, whether it's their first time or their 50th. For founders Glenn and Evelyn Bannerman, who both died in November 2020, camp was always about more than celebrating folk traditions. It's about community. The thing that has always been amazing to me is Dad's ability to take a crowd of people and have them eating out of his hand in 5 minutes, says Craig Bannerman, Wren's brother. He made them want to participate in what he was doing. That was a talent and a skill that he had that, in a lot of ways, made this thing possible. In the 1960s, Glenn was a professor of recreation and outdoor education at Presbyterian School of Christian Education in Richmond, Virginia, and traveled the country teaching folk dancing and clogging. But opportunities for him and Evelyn to dance and play together with their four kids were rare. So the Bannermans decided to create something new, something different, something inclusive. The Bannerman siblings, Craig, Wren, Beth, and Leanne, didn't grow up with parades, football, and Black Friday shopping over their Thanksgiving weekends. Instead, they danced for them and now for their own children and grandchildren. This is the only Thanksgiving they've ever known. It wasn't until I was much older that I kind of wished for a traditional Thanksgiving, and I thought I'd just like to watch the Macy Parade and eat a big meal and watch football, Leanne Bannerman says, and then adds with a laugh, and then the pandemic came, and that's what we did. And we thought, oh, it's not all that it's cracked up to be. Instead, they looked forward to each other's Thanksgiving traditions, like the puppet shows that their dad performed before an audience of mesmerized kids and adults, too. It was pure magic. It's like he waved a magic wand and people just gravitated to him, Leanne says. These days, it's Glenn and Evelyn's children and grandchildren and their spouses who plan, organize, and execute the weekend, bringing their own ideas, talents, and visions to camp and leading the different activities, like the cloth snowball fright happening now in the chapel. Balls of knotted strips of cloth whiz past my head. The small chapel is divided in two, and each side is trying to win by making sure there are fewer snowballs left on their side when time is up. Everyone, from toddlers to grandparents, are squealing in delight as they duck and jump out of the way of flying fabric. The key is to set aside any sense of dignity and you'll have a good time, jokes 20-year-old Sarah Bowen. She's here with her parents, sister, cousin, and grandfather this year. When I ask how old she was when she first started coming to camp, she laughs. Well, I was born in July, she says, so we're talking months at that point. I've met campers who've been attending for 20, 30, 40 years or more. A few were Glenn students at PSCE. Some folks stopped coming when the camp moved from Richmond to Black Mountain in 2001, but many still make the drive, including the Bowens. When campers gather for the traditional Thanksgiving dinner buffet in the dining hall on Thursday evening, family members might sit together, or they might not, choosing instead to sit with friends they haven't seen since last year. And no one is relegated to the kids' table. For the handful of new people who come to camp each year, it doesn't take long to feel like part of the group. In the morning, a member of the Bannerman clan, who's barely six, leads me to the chapel for family time. Another Bannerman invites me to sit with part of the family for Thanksgiving dinner. During a square dance, someone else grabs my hand and brings me into their group. That's the one thing about folk dancing that's universal, Bowen says. We never let anyone sit on the sidelines. Old-time melodies float down peacefully from the stage in the front of the chapel. The tempo doesn't mean much to the half-dozen kids dancing in front of the stage, still full of energy from the snowball fights and circle dances earlier. But Craig Bannerman and longtime camper Frank McConnell, both singing and playing guitar, aren't bothered. They love seeing the kids participate. This is what Bannerman's folk camp is all about. It's Sunday morning, and the crowd in the chapel is a little slimmer than the days before. Those who came from Pennsylvania and beyond have already packed up for the long drive home. Those who remain pat me on the back and say, "You're still here," with genuine happiness, as if they had been worried that they wouldn't be able to say goodbye. It's a bittersweet moment, the last camp of camp, sitting among so many people who welcome me as one of their own. I realize that this isn't really so different for them. Thanksgivings with a family. I spent time with people I've now come to care about, bonding over food, fun, dance, and a shared experience. Craig and Frank step off the stage, the lights in the chapel dim in preparation for the final puppet show, and parents corral their dancing kids who pile together in front of the small theater. For a moment, they're still and quiet. Curtain opens, the puppets rise from below, and everyone shares in this magical moment together. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.